It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, the hidden forces behind our everyday habits. So think about your typical morning routine. Maybe you start your day with a nice hot shower. Then you head to the kitchen where you flip on the lights, grind up some coffee beans, turn on the stove to make breakfast. Oh, and it's a little hot out today, so you turn on the fan or crank up the AC while you listen to the day's headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Cora.
Whatever your routine, every single morning, pretty much everything we do relies on a vast network of hidden infrastructure.
So things like water, it could be things like electricity, sewage, gas distribution, telecommunications, all kind of collectively in the space of what we think about as infrastructural systems. And we take these systems for granted and we just work on top of them.
This is Deb Chhatra. She is a professor of engineering at Olin College and the author of the book, How Infrastructure Works, Inside the Systems That Shape Our World.
There's kind of a truism that our infrastructural systems are invisible until they break. And when they break, they're sort of at the forefront of our attention, right? If you don't have clean water coming out of your tap, or if you have an electricity outage, or even if the internet goes down, right? Which is not a survival need, right? It's not a life-threatening thing in most cases, right? And it still really upends your day when that happens because we have learned to rely on these systems as our infrastructure.
Buckled roadways, melted electrical cables, public transit shutdowns.
But these systems that we rely on are being pushed to their breaking point.
The extreme heat in the Pacific Northwest this past weekend was brutal for the region's infrastructure.
In Texas, millions of people are enduring their third day without electricity in freezing cold temperatures.
Many families are being advised to boil what little tap water they have. Others just have no water at all.
As the climate changes and severe weather events become more common, Deb says our infrastructure is struggling to keep up.
So one of the things which we can't kind of lose sight of is that we want these systems to remain functioning and resilient because they underpin what we can do with our days and how we do it, rather than spending our days thinking about, well, where am I going to get clean water from, or how am I going to function without electricity?
And I think for many of us lay people, that we've taken for granted that, you know, we turn on the tap and clean water comes out, or that we always have electricity. This is quite a wake-up call. How much has a realization set in that the way we've set up our infrastructure has to change?
Well, I would say there's two pieces to that story. So the first one is that almost all of the systems that I describe require energy to work. And most of the energy that we use comes from fossil fuels. So that's the first thing, that if they're powered by energy and that energy is coming from fossil fuels, it produces greenhouse gas emissions, mostly carbon dioxide. The second thing, though, is that we now know that that landscape is changing, right? That climate change is being felt as climate impacts or climate disruptions. That's really meaning that things that we kind of took for granted about how the landscape works, what weather would be like, what 100-year storms are, right, are changing. And what that means is that the infrastructural systems, the networks that we built, thinking that they were in a stable landscape, well, that landscape may not be stable. In fact, most likely is not stable. So they're just not going to work very well anymore. Mm. And whether we like it or not, we need to rethink our infrastructural networks.
But these are physical systems that are embedded in the landscape. And that means that we need to think about these sort of landscapes as a whole.
Here's Deb Chhatra on the TED stage.
Our landscapes, of course, have been stable. And we know that that's not the case anymore, right? Climate change, that's what climate change is. It's making our landscapes less stable. And that means, you know, this is longer heat waves, this is stronger hurricanes, this is fires, this is flooding. Everything that we think about as extreme weather events, you know, this idea of a natural disaster, right? The thing that makes it a disaster is precisely that it's not natural, right? It's that it affects humans and human communities. And because our landscapes are becoming less stable, sooner or later, the who's affected will be all of us. But we can flip this around. Because as we decarbonize these systems, as we transform them, we have the opportunity to make them resilient, to make them responsive, to make them more equitable. I mean, our infrastructure systems, they are the most powerful tool that we have for how we can respond to climate change. And we know that we can do this, right? Because after decades of policy commitments, we've done the research, we have the renewable energy technology to transform this. We know that there's at least a pathway, and once we know that a pathway exists, we know that many pathways exist. But we can only choose to walk those pathways together, right? This is no longer an engineering problem to be solved.
So, in light of changing climate, unstable weather, unstable landscapes, we need to decarbonize our infrastructure systems. And you say that this actually presents a lot of opportunity.
Yeah. We now know how to use renewable energy at scale in a way we didn't 20 or 30 or so years ago. And it's hard to pin a date on it because there's two main things. One is the Danish wind turbine, the standard wind turbine that I'm sure you and almost everyone who's listening has seen. And the other is the ability to produce solar panels relatively inexpensively and at scale. And what those two changes mean is that we are now capable of using renewable energy at the same kind of scale that we use fossil fuels at. So 20 years ago, I would be saying, at some point in the future, we will be able to harness all of the abundant renewable energy that is arriving at the planet, and we will be able to rebuild our infrastructural systems to use that energy instead someday. And now I get to say, that day is here.
And in some places, the work is being done. In the UK, there's a massive effort underway to shift the electric grid to have 95% renewable energy by the end of this decade. Countries like Costa Rica, Brazil, and Norway are already there, all relying heavily on hydropower for their electricity. And in the US, tech companies are leading the charge for transitioning to renewables to meet the future demands of the artificial intelligence industry.
The fundamental idea behind a lot of infrastructural systems is that you invest in these systems because you're investing in the well-being of the people who are going to use them. You know, we understand that building out infrastructural systems is widely understood to be something that pays for itself, even in terms of return on investment. A lot of hard-headed economists and financial analysts have shown that the cost of actually building out the infrastructure that mitigates the impacts of climate change is much, much cheaper than dealing with the effects of climate change.
I was actually recently just outside of LA, where there are these massive wind turbines that you've mentioned. And I, you know, I couldn't help but think about electricity the whole time I was there because they were so in your face. They're huge. You can't avoid them. And I asked someone, I was like, what do you think of them? And they said, oh, you know, you get used to it. They become part of the landscape.
Did you ever look at certain parts of California where they have heavy windmills?
But the president has said he is not a fan, like on the Joe Rogan podcast in 2024.
It is the ugliest thing. It looks like a graveyard almost, a graveyard of windmills.
It's pollution.
It's so bad.
And the federal government will not be supporting these projects. So where will the revamp of our infrastructure stand without federal funding?
So I think that places that have the resources and have the kind of political will to start addressing this kind of transformative change and mitigating climate impacts, they will keep doing it whether or not they have federal resources to do it. So places that have the resources can move farther ahead and make more resilient, sustainable communities. Places that don't are not going to be able to do that. There'll be a bigger division between those two. And that's not just in the United States. That's going to be true globally. And a lot of that work will continue regardless of what is happening at any kind of higher levels in the hierarchy. Mm. And I teach undergraduate engineering students. And so I really want them to understand that their lives are not about fixing the problems that their grownups left them. No, your job is to build out this world, right? And you will, on the way there, you can address all the problems that you've been left.
I mean, when you put it that way, wow, what a time to be an engineering student. This is like, there is a chapter here where you can really make a huge change, where a generation from now, if people just think what you've done is normal, you will have succeeded, right? That like almost like when the railroad tracks were laid in the United States.
I think it's very much like that, because we remember, I think few of us remember directly, but certainly we understand the role of the New Deal as making that big investment into our lives collectively by building out infrastructure. And I think it's the moment where we have the opportunity to do that again. And this time, you know, we get to go sort of much farther and to do it in a way that is much more responsive to our needs. And it'll be, you know, there might not be another Hoover Dam to point at, right? But I think the evidence of that work could and will be everywhere. And it'll be just a part of the fabric of our lives. I think that will be true after this transformation. And some of it might be big fields, but a lot of it might be just embedded, you know, into our daily lives or into our communities.
So in the 20th century, we built out these kind of massive monolithic systems. And I have to say, like, I am a fan of our charismatic megastructures. So in the U.S., that's the Golden Gate Bridge, it's the Hoover Dam, right? These were built as monuments and they were built to endure. But in the 21st century, our infrastructural systems will need to endure not like monuments, but like forests. So if you think about a forest ecosystem, it's powered by the sun, it's rooted in the earth, there's no waste. Everything is basically used to grow new things. It endures, but it actually evolves and changes with time. And of course, it provides a place where all who live there can thrive. Our infrastructural systems are how we take care of each other at scale, so that we can take care of each other as individuals. They underpin our agency, and they really foster and allow us to develop our social relationships with each other. All of these are about what it means to be human, right? And that means that a commitment to a shared infrastructural future is a commitment to our shared humanity. So this is the world that we can create together. Thank you.
That's engineering professor Deb Chhatra. She's the author of the book, How Infrastructure Works, Inside the Systems That Shape Our World. You can see her full talk at TED.com.